BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Welcome everyone to another BDNG Meets podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG. So today I have great pleasure in introducing Luke Langlands, who's a Joint Chief Executive of the TSA, which stands for Tuberous Sclerosis Association. So for those that are not sure about this condition, this podcast will open your eyes and also open your eyes in how it's related to dermatology. And we've all got exciting news that some new treatments will be coming through as well. So we will be discussing this in podcast and journal articles and through the BDNG website as well. So welcome, Luke. Welcome. Really happy to have you here today.
Thank you. Yeah, very happy to be here. Yeah, thank you.
A pleasure. So, Luke, could you first of all just start off by explaining to our listeners today actually what is tuberous sclerosis and how you maybe became involved with the association as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So tuberous sclerosis complex, or TSC, it's a rare genetic disease, which means that you're born with it. You can't catch it, of course. And what happens with TSC is that the body is predisposed to growing non-cancerous tumours. So these tumours can be in any part of the body. Very, very commonly, they are on the skin, particularly the face, which is why we're talking today. But it can also be in the brain, the kidneys, any organ, as I say. And the depending on the location and the size of those tumours, depends on how the individual is affected. And everyone with TSC experiences the condition slightly differently, which is one of the trickiest things from ourselves as a patient group. We work hard to make sure that we are representing and supporting everyone affected by TSC, regardless of how the condition affects them personally. In terms of the dermatology aspect, it is a particularly high and prevalent area of TSC and how it affects people. It's also one of the main factors for diagnosing TSC as well. So one of the major factors in terms of indicating that someone has TSC is that they get something called ash leaf patches. It tends to be around the torso or trunk, often on lower back. It's sort of a hard darker skin patch, and it looks like an ash leaf, literally. That's why it's called that. And as I said, that's one of the main factors for TSC. And also lots of people with TSC get they're called facial angiofibromas. So facial angiofibromas are small tumours on the face. It tends to be around sort of the T-zone area and the upper nose. And it's roughly around 4 in 5 people with TSC have that. And we understand that for many people with TSC, it's one of the most challenging aspects of the condition. Predominantly, from what we're told by people, predominantly because it's one of the very few, if not the only, visual indications that someone has TSC. So the other aspects, such as epilepsy, kidney problems, lung problems, they're sort of behind the scenes, as it were, whereas the facial and skin challenges are very much sort of there for everyone to see, which can be a big emotional and physical challenge as well. So that's why something like today is so important to us.
Oh, and it's fantastic to have you here and explain so eloquently as well around the condition. And with what you've said as well, you mentioned a couple of things there that, you know, it is rare. That's based what I want to ask the first question. How rare is this condition, and is it picked up normally in children or adolescents or adults? What sort of age groups, or does it vary?
So the stock answer for most questions about TSE is it depends.
Okay, good answer.
But in terms of prevalence, I can give you more of a direct answer to that. We believe there's roughly around 1 to 1.5 million people around the world who have TSE. We're working hard as a charity ourselves at the Tuberous Sclerosis Association, but then also TSE experts more broadly across the UK, to try to pin down what is that prevalence from a UK perspective. We believe it's probably roughly around 10,000 people in the UK. But as time goes by, we're getting more and more confident on that. One of the key things we're working on right now is supporting researchers to develop a TSE registry within the NHS. And once that is underway, we should have much clearer numbers. We're expecting within the next few years to be much more confident in terms of the actual prevalence, because it's not only the individual with the condition, it affects whole families, indeed, or whole families for generations even, because you have it's more likely that there's greater care responsibilities, which then impacts on all aspects of life, not only the physical aspects, the mental health aspects, there's also the financial aspect. Perhaps a parent has to no longer work to care for a child, for example, and that has a knock-on effect for siblings, for any children that come later down the line and things like that. In terms of how TSE is diagnosed, or when TSE is diagnosed, it's getting earlier and earlier now. So people can be diagnosed at any time in their life. And very, very broadly, this isn't the same for everyone, but very, very broadly, the more affected a person is going to be by TSE, the earlier they're diagnosed. So people later in life, let's say 40s, 50s, they can very well be diagnosed with TSE for the first time. And it tends to be because of a particular challenge with the condition. Very often it's kidney problems with people who are later in life. But as time goes by, is where we're starting to understand the condition more. Clinicians are getting more awareness of the condition, first of all, but then we're also getting better at recognizing the key factors of TSE. The diagnosis is getting earlier and earlier. More generally, as I say, for everyone it's very, very different. But someone could be diagnosed pre-birth, for example. That tends to be because of tumors found on the heart. That's a very, very, very much a telltale sign, all the way up to midlife, to later life, as I say. In terms of dermatology and skin, that tends to be a big factor in diagnosing children and newborns as well. As I say, predominantly the ash leaf patches, which are around the trunk, but then facial angiofibromas, they may start to develop in childhood, and then very much in adolescence is when they start to really start to come in.
And that's again, I could ask you loads and loads of questions on the back of what you've just said there. I'll start off really with, I mean, obviously you've mentioned the sort of genetic predisposition as well. And is there any, I mean, you mentioned obviously getting picked up on the heart, etc. But is there any sort of specific genetic testing, if it is in your bloodline, would you automatically have your children tested? Is that something that happens with TSE?
When an individual is diagnosed with TSE, or when TSE is suspected, it's likely that they will get a genetic test. They don't always get one, because often the diagnosis can be quite definitive by the sort of the checklists that the clinicians do. But if an individual is diagnosed, typically what happens is that their immediate family will be offered a genetic test. So let's say a six-year-old is diagnosed with TSC, their parents will be offered the test, and most likely siblings as well. But it very much depends on an individual circumstance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, medicine isn't clear cut at the end of the day, is it? So, you know, there's always these, you know, it's not always sort of set in stone. So you can totally understand that. And also it does sound very proactive in what your, you know, the education that's coming through, and also proactive in what's, you know, ahead as well. I won't talk about the registry just now, but I really do want to talk about that later on in this podcast, definitely. Going back to, obviously relating this back to dermatology, you mentioned about this ash leaf sort of spots, and I just want to concentrate on that just now. Is that something that comes up frequently, or does it come up quite soon in the condition, or is it quite rare? Is how does it work?
Yeah, so the ash leaf patches is very common. It's not always, it's not definitive. Many people have TSC without any dermatology challenges at all, but that is rare in the rare condition. It is a major factor in most people with TSC. The ash leaf patch is one of the telltale signs, especially in newborns. Often it will be a parent or parents, caregivers who they might just so happen to notice it when with the child and think, oh, that looks a bit funny there. And it may well be that they go to their GP or another clinical professional to discuss that specifically, or it could be another feature starts. For example, infantile spasms, which are seizures in newborns and children. That may happen, and then you hope the clinician will then think, is this TSC? They will then ask about dermatology. Does your boy or little boy or girl have any patches on their skin? Can I have a look? They see that that's a big okay. We're looking at TSC here.
Yeah, I guess it is a sort of a definite clue, you know, when you definitely, you know what it's related to as well. And these ash leaf sort of patches, are they big? Are they small? Are they, you know, do they have a few, or is it just specific?
They tend to be fairly big and quite prominent. Again, it depends on the individual, which, as I say, it's quite a vague answer, which answers much in TSC, unfortunately, but we are getting better across everything in the condition. Yeah, it does vary. They do tend to be quite prominent. And as I said, on the lower back tends to be a telltale area, or anywhere around the trunk. And it's just a skin, either a skin lightening or a skin darkening, just a different pigmentation. It tends to be quite a distinctive shape. If a nurse, for example, was wanting to keep an eye out, do very much keep in mind just an autumn leaf is the best way to describe it. And it's also got that the look and texture about it is very, very similar to that as well.
That's a great explanation, and it makes sense totally. And also in skin of colour, would you say that is it more difficult to diagnose, or is it quite prominent in skin of colour? Because obviously we do know the difficulties with, you know, skin tones can be quite tricky at times.
I certainly wouldn't say that it's trickier. My understanding of it is that it will be equally prominent. It will just be the clearly different pigmentation. Yeah.
Brilliant. Is it itchy at all?
The ash leaf patch shouldn't be particularly itchy, but the facial angiofibromas can be extremely itchy. Yeah. And very, very troublesome. You also get not only the facial angiofibromas in dermatology, but also very, very small tumors underneath and around fingernails and toenails as well, and they can be, as you can imagine, very, very troublesome and very, very frustrating for people. Yeah.
can imagine. Yeah. So we are talking about quite visual here as well, you know, when you've got the combination there of possibly three sort of skin conditions as well. And that's really why I wanted Luke to speak to us today about this condition. We will be doing more work as well with various associates with TSC. But I felt it was really important to, you know, sort of focus on these rare conditions, isn't it, Luke? Because, you know, not everyone will see this or come across this. So it's really important to get the message across. So talking about the message getting across, very exciting. I do love a registry. I really do. I think they're so important. I really do. And we're getting more and more now in dermatology. And I love to fly the flag for the new ones. So tell me more about this TSC registry and how will it be rolled out to possibly the nation, is it? Or is it certain hospitals, certain practices?
Yes. So there is actually several registries potentially going through at the same time. This registry that I'm talking about, it's we are proud to be a funder of it. So the Tuberous Sclerosis Association, we're only small, but we certainly punch above our weight in terms of what we achieve. And one of the major things we achieve is in research. So we've helped to fund, for example, the work that discovered the genes responsible for TSC, and a whole range of other major discoveries in the condition is partly thanks to our funding. So we're particularly proud of that, and that's continuing to this day and onwards, including funding this research into a registry. So yes, it will be created through the NHS. It will start in one or two TSC clinics. So there are a number of clinics across the UK. I think there's 23 at the last count. And then it will roll out. The main thing we're hoping to achieve is to understand the prevalence, diagnosis in terms of ages. And then a broader understanding of where those similarities and divergent experiences lie, because right now we have all the data from different spots, but we don't have a definitive sort of life story of the majority that we can compare and contrast within all individuals with the condition. And we do have very, very high hopes for this registry and other registries as well, that it really will be defining. So the real success in terms of registries in rare conditions is cystic fibrosis. So cystic fibrosis has a fantastic registry. I think it's something like 98 or 99% of patients in the UK with cystic fibrosis are on this registry. And that is managed by the main cystic fibrosis charity. And it's helped to really to put CF on the map. There is more people with CF compared to TSC, but not overly so. So we are sort of seeing this registry as where TSC could be, where all clinicians are aware of cystic fibrosis, where the average people on the street have at least heard of it, whereas right now they probably haven't even heard of TSC. They couldn't give even an attempt as to what the condition is. So hopefully that's where the registry will take us.
Yeah, and with the BDNG as well, I mean, we've got a lot of members out there. So, you know, it's sort of flying the flag as well, you know, for TSC, which is really important. And when I was approached about this condition, to be fair, I didn't know much about it either. And, you know, I've obviously read and learnt more about it, and speaking with yourself and some of your colleagues, you know, I've learnt more. But again, it's so important because it's something that could easily be missed if, you know, when we're examining patients as well. So yeah. And you mentioned there are 23 clinics across the UK. Is that up and down, like Wales, Scotland, Ireland, or mainly concentrated down in England? It usually sometimes can be
across everywhere. Right. So there's certainly more certainly more clinics in England, but that's just the nature of population and prevalence numbers. But yes, so we have a range of clinics all across the UK focused on TSC, and the clinicians who run those clinics, in particular the nurse specialists in them, are incredible. Many of them do the clinic, they run it just off their own back. You know, some even do it on their days off, which is incredible. We're so thankful for that. And we at the TSA, the Tuberous Sclerosis Association, we act as secretariat to that network of clinics. It's NHS recognised. It's called the TSC Rare Disease Collaborative Network. So many of your readers and listeners will be aware of RDCNs. So we are secretariat to the TSC equivalent, and it's also important because it helps to encourage equality across the UK. It shouldn't make any difference if you live in London, Oxford, Sunderland, somewhere in the Highlands, Falkirk, anywhere. It shouldn't make any difference to your care pathways for TSC, and the clinics help to encourage that, and us talking to them. It also means that the clinicians can learn from each other as well, because all the clinics have different expertise and experiences within the clinicians themselves. So, for example, there is a nurse who we work with very, very closely, who is excellent with supporting TSC patients who perhaps have learning disabilities or additional needs. So we have worked with that individual to upskill other specialist nurses across the UK through the RDCN as well. Our work with the clinics, we do have a number of events throughout the year where the clinicians come together. That includes a nurse specialist face-to-face meeting as well. So it's an all-day meeting. It tends to happen in sort of later in the year, autumn, winter time, where all nurse specialists we invite to come along to learn more about TSA as a condition, to upskill one another and to grow as well.
It sounds like it's a really strong network, actually. It sounds really, really strong. And we're really lucky. I've got one of your lovely nurses speaking with me, I think, in a couple of weeks. So we're going to be interviewing her as well. So I'm really excited about speaking to her about what she does and how she's specialised in this topic. It's really, you know, we will at the BDNG do anything we can to promote the register as well. And, you know, that is definitely a future sort of topic that we will be exploring a wee bit more with yourselves in the future. Before I come on to the TSA, is there any sort of specific treatments or anything, you know, that you can offer to the patients? I suppose it depends on, you know, the actual specific diagnosis, but is there any sort of treatments out there for this condition?
Yes, there certainly is. So the last few years has been very, very optimistic for TSC as a condition to treat. Our ultimate aim as a charity is to find the cure. We're not quite there yet, but we are really pleased with the development in the last few years, even in the time that I've been with the TSA, in treating the challenges that come with TSC. In terms of dermatology, the main treatment offered is topical sirolimus. So that is under the brand name Hiftor. That is the predominant treatment for dermatology. You do also have things such as laser treatment, but that is often not possible for everyone to have such treatment, depending on how the condition affects them. But Hiftor, we have found to be well accepted by the majority of patients in terms of its efficacy and everything else. And yeah, but obviously there it depends on individual circumstances out there. But we have found that the treatment for dermatology in particular is often life-changing for individuals with particularly strong facial angiofibromas. It's quite cruel that the FAs tends to come in really become more prominent in adolescence. So right at a time where kids are growing up, they're perhaps getting a little bit more self-aware, and aware of themselves and how their body is changing. Right at that time, their facial angiofibromas will start to really come in. So anything we can do to help that, and it's not only teenagers, of course, adults, and younger children as well, really have significant challenges with them. But anything that can help should be welcomed.
Yeah, you can understand. And you mentioned earlier in this podcast, you know, about the psychological impact, which you could totally understand. With the TSA, do you do support network with patients? Is that how it works? Or is it for healthcare professionals, or both?
We do everything, everything for everyone in the TSC community across the UK. So in terms of the community, we very much include professionals in that, so nurse specialists, GPs, other clinicians, also education professionals, social care professionals. We're here to support all professionals focused on TSC, but absolutely, we are here for people with the condition, first and foremost, I would argue. So from that first minute that a diagnosis is made, we're there to support, to help, whether that is specific information, helping with clinical referrals, day-to-day challenges and things like that, all the way to just being a listening ear as well. So we do have a support line, a helpline that we encourage individuals and family members with TSC to contact us, whether they have a specific question or they just need to talk to someone who understands TSC. We also have a wide range of events and opportunities for people in the TSC community to connect. So for example, this month is our annual, it's we have it every year. It's our annual event for adults with TSC, so that goes to different parts of the UK every year. This year it's in Portsmouth, and then in June, we are having our largest event of the year. Happens every year. It's called Big Day, and that's happening in Milton Keynes this year. And that's for absolutely everyone in the TSC community to come along to. We also do a wide range of virtual events, things on socials, things like that. For example, right now, we are running an art therapy course for teenagers with TSC, and also their siblings and friends as well. And that's been wonderful. It's a space where they can really express themselves, and it's run by an amazing professional artist called Sarah Goy, and she herself has TSC as well. So it's one of the most rewarding things we've ever done, from my perspective anyway.
It just sounds phenomenal what you are actually achieving. I mean, you mentioned earlier about punching high. You are punching absolutely way high with your what you're offering here. And that art, it's just sounds phenomenal as well. And what's really, you know, hit home as well, if you know that person actually has TSC as well. So, you know, there must be a lot of understanding there. So as any healthcare professional, just to make sure, can have a look at the site and have a look and explore, is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, we are actually in the middle of developing CPD accredited training modules all about TSC as well, which will be directed to healthcare professionals. So once that launches, hopefully it will help specialists and non-specialist clinicians learn more about TSC. But absolutely, the website is there. I'd encourage individuals who are clinicians supporting patients with TSC to either get in contact with us directly. They can ask to be part of the network, and kept in the loop on all things TSC through us. And there is also the UK clinical guidelines into TSC. That's hugely helpful to understand the expected steps in support and management. We do have some summary documents off the guidelines, which I know the clinicians use rather than the actual guidelines, because they're much easier to look at a glance. We are actually in the middle of updating those guidelines because they're a little bit old now, and there has been a few treatments that have come through since those guidelines were developed, including HIFT or topical sirolimus for facial angiofibromas.
Fabulous. And I've got to ask this because all the listeners out there will be asking this question. Are you able to send myself the links to the TSA site, and also maybe links to some of the information that you've mentioned, and I can put all this into, you know, our journal article and our link to our podcast?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Very, very happy to. We'll send you everything.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you very much indeed. Because we do want to get the message strongly across about this condition. It is rare, like Lucas said, but, you know, it is something that is happening to our patients, and it can be, you know, diagnosed with the certain skin conditions, like we've mentioned, the ash leaf sort of patches and, you know, the fibromas as well. And it's something we could come across, even though there is 23 clinics across the nation. It's something that a nurse could specifically, you know, come across in her clinic. And I think it's really important to, you know, we know about all the sort of conditions we see every day in dermatology, but when it comes to the rare ones, it's always good to have a background knowledge of these as well. And it's so interesting. The more you read about this condition and the more that you understand that Luke does is absolutely phenomenal. So I advise anyone to have a look at the website as well. Have you got a quick sort of link for the website, Luke, that you could say on the podcast, or is it too long?
So it's nice and easy. So tuberous-sclerosis.org. is us. But if you search for tuberous sclerosis complex charity, UK charity, something like that, into a search engine, we tend to come up as well.
Great. It's quite easy then. So I would advise all our listeners to have a look at that. And the great news is we will be doing more work in the future. We've got lots on our agenda. The more I've spoken to Luke today, I will be harassing him, unfortunately, for some more information as well. We will keep you updated on any of the registers. And Luke, before we leave, I'd like to say a huge thank you. You've really explored the condition just so eloquently. You've explained everything, and, you know, a lot of our listeners now will have a greater understanding. They'll also understand that, you know, there is, you know, help out there. The psychological support is phenomenal. You've got such a strong network as well. It's, you know, it sounds really, really, you know, dynamic what you're actually achieving. And the fact is that, you know, we're learning more and more and more about this condition. And I think the future hopefully will be a lot more brighter for patients with this condition. Before we leave, Luke, is there any sort of key aspects you'd like to get across to our listeners today?
Well, thank you for that. First and foremost, it's been lovely, and very, very happy to chat. And yeah, I'd just encourage all nurses who are listening or will be reading just to be aware of the condition, as you've said yourself there, Tina. It can be a truly devastating condition across all aspects of the condition, including dermatology. And it's like many rare conditions and many conditions in general, it changes an individual's life within seconds. That first time of hearing either you or a child that you're in care of have this rare condition, tuberous sclerosis complex. We hear every day from people who have heard 30 seconds ago, a minute ago, the condition for the first time, and the clinician gives them our card, and that's them on their journey. So just be aware, and also have as much understanding and patience as you can for people with the condition and their families as well. Understand that it is an incredibly confusing, challenging, scary time for them, and anything a clinician can do to help is to be welcomed, and we're there to help you help the patient.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, reassuringly listening to this podcast, nurses out there, you know, we're not all experts in every skin condition. We're not all experts in all medicine. But the fact is, we've got to have good signposting is just so phenomenal. To listen to that patient makes a big difference. You know, you don't have to be an expert. And I think, you know, to have the knowledge that, you know, we can, you know, refer on to the TSA, you know, we understand that it has this huge support network, and, you know, it's just, it means so much to patients. They walk out of that consultation feeling supported and feeling like a person again, because somebody's listened. Isn't it?
All we ever hope is to get a next step. Whenever anyone contacts us on the TSA support line, we make sure there's always a next step, because we hear from many people with the condition and their families where they've hit a brick wall, where a clinician has said, well, there's not really much more we can do, and this, there's that, whether rightly or wrongly. So we always work hard, and I'd emphasize that to any nurses listening or who will be reading, just give a clear signposting next step. Well, we're not sure on how your little boy or girl will be affected by TSC, but we're here for you. We're always on the other end of the phone. There's this wonderful charity you can get in touch with. Just give something. It's important that people have something to build on.
Absolutely. Really strong words, and what a fabulous ending to this podcast, even though I could speak to you all day on this, and I'm sure our listeners have lots of other questions as well. But the good news is we will be exploring more about TSC and also the TSA as well in future interviews and podcasts as well. So it's not the end. It's not the end of Luke, definitely not. Luke, I can't thank you enough. It's been a fantastic podcast to record. I've loved every minute, and you know, I really feel you've got a strong message across to our listeners today. And well done to the TSA. It's absolutely phenomenal, the support that you are providing, and it's great to hear, you know, there is, you know, clinics out there and these amazing nurses that are so special in this field as well. So I am really, really grateful. And on behalf of the BDNG, we'd like to say a massive thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been lovely. Been lovely to talk. And as you say, we're always here. We hope to do more. And the thanks are very much ours to the BDNG, but then also to the nurses out there who are doing incredible work. We are very much here to support you. We're the scaffolding that hopefully helps to keep you and all the incredible clinicians out there keep doing what you're doing. So yeah, the thanks are ours.
Absolutely mutual, absolutely mutual. And I love the scaffolding. You definitely have provided me with a lot of scaffolding today, definitely. Thanks again, Luke, and we'll hope to hear from you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.